You are listening to continuing coverage of the trial of Chad Daybell from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Let's go back to the courtroom.
All right. Commission court is now in session. Honorable Stephen. Excuse me.
Three boys.
Good boys. Man, sorry, went down the wrong hole.
Terrifying. Thank you. Please be seated. All right. Good morning, everyone. We are on the record now on case CR 2221-1623, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Daybell. Prosecution's present as well as the defendant and defense counsel. We are at the stage of the trial where we've concluded the state's case in chief, and the defense is ready to begin putting on its case before we have the jurors brought in, and they'll be here momentarily. They're lined up in the hall, but I did want to address one thing on the record outside the presence of the jurors. So before we concluded last week, as I'm sure the parties recall, we had after the state rested their defense motion for judgment of acquittal that the court addressed last Thursday, and the court did make a ruling on the record on that as it related to count four in the indictment. And upon further consideration, the court will maintain the ruling and deny the motion. In terms of going forward, having thought about addressing that issue with count four, it's the court's determination at this point, it's going to be addressed with a jury instruction that is going to discuss the difference in the indictment and what the instruction will be as it relates to dates, and will permit jurors to consider those dates originally listed in the first indictment that was not supposed to have been amended on dates. So I'm going to have the instruction prepared, a draft of it, and counsel will be given an opportunity to review the instruction and determine whether or not they agree or whether there's any objection to the instruction in that manner of going forward as it relates to count four. I'll also note, as we are getting to this stage of the proceedings, we are going to be getting to jury instruction soon. And in this case, it's a large undertaking on the issue as it relates to the indictment. I just want to give credit where credit's due. And it was my staff attorney, Courtney Stallings, that did discover the issue with the indictment. And she's been working diligently towards also preparing these jury instructions. And I just want counsel to know that it's the court's ultimate duty to make sure the instructions are correct, but I would surely appreciate the assistance and help of counsel doing their best to make sure our instructions are all proper, that they're accurate, they adequately reflect the law and the evidence in this case. And while the court will ultimately approve those, your help and diligence, I hope you can be as efficient and good going through things as my staff attorney has been throughout this trial and assisting in many issues, including that important issue that was discovered last week. So the court is going to talk to counsel about when we'll be proposing a jury instruction conference, of course, before deliberations. And as we get towards the end of this trial, we'll watch the scheduling and how things unfold, and I'll let counsel know when we're going to be prepared to work through jury instructions before deliberations, but it is going to take time and it is complicated, this being a capital case. So if counsel could please keep that in mind as we move forward this week and going forward in the trial, I'd appreciate it. With that in mind, then, I think we're ready to start with additional evidence with the defense case in chief. Mr. Pryor, is the defense going to be ready to call a witness once we bring in our jurors?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. And is the state ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. So let's go ahead, and I'll put one more thing on the record. I did receive the jury affirmation notices from all 17 of our jurors. They're all here today, and so we'll have them brought in and begin with the defense case in chief, please.
Sure. Judge, permission to approach the podium?
Yes.
All right, please. Here's our president counter for you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Bailiff. Please be seated. All right, we are on the record on KCR 22-21-1623, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Daybell. The state rested last week before the weekend. We're going to continue on in trial now with the defense case in chief. The court would note the jurors are all properly seated, and the court has received the juror affirmations signed by each one of our jurors for following the court's continuing instruction as we broke for the weekend. So thank you again, each of you, for following that instruction as you have throughout this trial. Your time and efforts are very much appreciated, I'm sure, by the parties and the court as well. And so we're ready to commence now with the calling of the first witness for the defense case. Mr. Pryor, who's the witness going to be?
Emma Murray, Judge.
Very well. We'll go ahead and have the witness brought in, please.
You solemnly swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
Yes.
Thank you.
Right to the microphone, and then your first working picture.
Thank you.
May I, Judge?
Before we get started, I was just sitting here considering whether or not the exclusionary rule applies to this witness, and I don't believe it does. Is that correct?
That's correct, Judge. But in the issue of precaution, my subpoenas stated that nobody was to observe any of the proceedings, and I will inquire Ms. Murray as to whether she observed any of the proceedings anyway, Judge.
Okay. I think it's just fair on questioning for examination on Director Cross, but I won't make any inquiry on the exclusionary order. So with that, I'll just remind the witness then you are under oath for your testimony. You can inquire on direct if you'd like, Mr. Pryor.
Would you state your name, spell your last name for the record for me, please?
Emma Murray, M-U-R-R-A-Y.
And Emma, there's a gentleman to my left in a blue shirt at the desk over there. Do you recognize who that is?
Yes, that's my father.
Now, I noticed that your last name is Murray. Can you tell me, explain that to me, please?
I was married and changed my name.
You are married?
Yes, I'm married.
And your husband is Joseph Murray?
Yes.
Did you receive a subpoena from either the prosecutor or the defense in this particular case?
I received a subpoena from both.
Okay. And at no point you were called for the prosecution, is that correct?
I was not.
And you did receive a subpoena from my office to appear as well?
I did.
And in that subpoena, did it indicate that we would rather you not review the proceedings as part of this, as part of your testimony in this case?
Yes, and I did not.
I want to talk a little bit about how often we've had an occasion to talk about this case, you and I. And can you explain to the jury how often we've spoken about this case?
I've talked to John maybe 3 times.
And last night we met prior to your testimony today.
That's correct.
At any time, did I indicate to you any way you're supposed to say or what or anything that you should say or were supposed to say as part of your testimony?
You told me just to tell the truth.
Okay, and you're prepared to tell the truth today.
I am.
I want to talk a little bit about where you're living right now. And where do you live right now?
I live in the house that was my parents'.
Okay. And at this point, you're not aware of any financial situation. Is it true that you're not aware of any financial situation between myself and your father regarding that house?
That's correct.
And you don't have any personal knowledge of anything that is any arrangement between your father and I. Is that correct?
Yeah, I made an arrangement with my father. I don't know what he's decided with you.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit about your mother's health. What can you tell me in general about your mother's health in the last year or so?
Her health started declining. I was really worried about it. She'd always been one to be able to meet the demands of daily life without being exhausted. And she started going to bed at like before dinner some nights. It would be like 5, 6, 7 o'clock at night. And she would sleep in too if given the opportunity. So suddenly needing to sleep a lot was very confusing to me.
Are you aware of any health issues that your mother may or may not have had?
I, at the time, was not. Since her passing, I've been diagnosed with sleep apnea, and my maternal grandfather also has sleep apnea, and she's the generational link between, so I wonder if she did. That's something that obviously we can't investigate at this time, but Symptoms like daytime tiredness and not getting restful sleep seem like they would fit what?
Speculation.
It's sustained.
Okay. Were you aware of any other health maladies that your mother may have suffered from?
She had anemia.
Okay. Were you aware of any medications that your mother may have taken?
She preferred herbal supplements. She did take the generic form of the medication Prozac.
Okay.
That was the only prescribed medication that she regularly took.
Were there any non-prescription medications or herbs or supplements that you're aware of?
Oh, definitely. She really liked using colloidal silver was her favorite. It's...
Slow down for me. Colloidal silver?
Colloidal silver. It's distilled water with particles of silver in it to the part per million. It tastes like you're drinking water out of a metal water bottle, and it can cure everything.
Okay, and
I say that with a smile because you really should go to the doctor instead of drinking.
Else for speculation.
World,
go ahead.
She would use colloidal silver as an antiviral, is what she called it. So anytime she felt under the weather, she would take colloidal silver, and she would.
This calls for hearsay.
Overruled.
Go ahead.
I witnessed her drinking it, and she would encourage other people in our household to do so.
Okay. Were you a consumer of colloidal silver?
I was.
Okay. How'd that work for you?
It tastes nasty.
Okay. Did it help you in curing any ailments that you may have had?
I don't know. Okay.
Were there other things that your mother did in terms of remedies to resolve other issues she may have had?
She bruised really easily, and she used arnica gel.
Okay.
Arnica is a plant that helps with bruising. She had it in gel form.
And when you say she bruised easily, can you elaborate on that?
If she were to bump her hip on the counter when she was walking by, she would get a massive bruise from that. Even things like carrying a heavier load of groceries where the bag pressed on her arm would leave a bruise.
Okay. Okay. I want to go to the date of October 18th of 2019. Do you recall that day?
Yes.
Okay. And on the 18th, you were, and before I get there, your mother was employed at a school. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Now, in terms of the physical size of that school, can you describe the physical size of that elementary school for me, please?
This was a smaller elementary school built in a rural area. The area is growing, but the school is still small. Right now, it houses 3 grades.
Okay. So if there was discussion about having to travel within the school, would that be a significant distance that you would have to travel within this school?
No, I was also employed there at the time, and it was not a hassle to walk from one side of the building to the other.
Okay. And at the time, I'm going to go back to October 18th. And on the 18th, was there some sort of an event or occurrence that was taking place at the school?
The next week, there was going to be a book fair. It was going to be held in the library where my mom worked. And she needed to prepare her workspace to become a store. The community was going to be coming in and buying books. And so she wanted to move her personal items and personal books, so that way they wouldn't get sold or stolen.
And in terms of distance from in this small school you described, how far was your classroom to where your mother's library was?
There were 2 different locations where she would work. One was a computer lab that was right next to my classroom. Some people didn't know that, but they shared a wall. You would have to walk around the corner for the entryway, but I could hear her teaching and she could hear me. Her library was just the next hallway over. It was okay. Hardly a walk.
When you say hardly a walk, did it encompass miles?
No.
Feet?
Feet.
Okay. Now, in terms of interaction with other members of the school, how would you describe your mother's personality?
My mother was an introvert at the core. She could be friendly and small talk with people. But in general, I noticed she didn't confide in people. I also observed at that school, we, like many public schools, needed a lot more employees than we had. So most people were overburdened with work, especially support staff. And so she really didn't have time to visit. Even during lunchtime, when you would typically think someone could sit down and chat with a neighbor, she was helping students go through the lunch line and pay.
Would it have been your mother's habit to openly discuss her health issues with members of her school staff?
Objection, Your Honor. Calls for speculation.
Sustained.
At any time, were you present when your mother discussed any of her health issues with other members of the school staff?
Any chance that I got to, I would go visit her in her classroom. And I never observed her talking about her health with our coworkers. She seemed pretty embarrassed about...
Objection, Your Honor. Calls for speculation.
Sustained.
Did you observe your mother in terms of her interactions with other members of the school staff?
I did.
And what did you observe?
I did not observe her talking about her health.
Okay. Would you describe your mother as a very private person?
Yes.
Okay. Would you agree that she it wasn't her habit to want to miss work?
She wanted to go every day.
Okay. Was that her work ethic or was there some other underlying reason?
Her work ethic. She was also not a salaried employee. So she was paid by the hour.
So it was important financially from your perspective that she work?
Yes.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit about the book fair on the 18th and the preparations that were involved. Did you personally observe anything as far as your mother preparing for the book fair?
She loaded her personal belongings in boxes and loaded them heavier than perhaps she should have, because I observed her walking down the hallway and she was resting the box against her body on her arms, holding it back and walking with a lot of effort. I was in a meeting and I actually stepped out to help her because it was way too heavy for her.
And on that occasion, what vehicle did she drive to the school to load those boxes and unload those boxes?
She drove my parents' Dodge Dakota that day.
Okay. And then I want to go back to approximately 2017 forward. Who was the primary driver of the Dodge Dakota?
My father.
Okay. And what would your mother be driving?
She would be driving a Chevy Equinox. Okay. She always liked to drive the nicer of the two vehicles.
Now, there were exceptions to your mother and father switching vehicles. Would that be fair?
That's correct.
But primarily, your dad was the one driving the Dodge Dakota. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Eventually, that truck was sold to who?
My husband and I.
Okay. Do you still have that truck?
Yes.
Okay. Your mother would use a common phrase in the last year of her life in terms of an assessment of how she would feel.
Yes. Objection. Calls for hearsay.
Sustained.
Were there occasions when you would, I think I'll move on from there. That's okay. I want to talk a little bit about the Fitbit. Your mother had a Fitbit. Is that right?
Yes. She had a wristwatch that would count her steps.
Okay. And at this point, was it her habit to use that Fitbit on a regular basis?
Yes. She would wear it during the day and then charge it at night.
Okay.
When she was sleeping.
So she was counting her steps during the day as part of that Fitbit?
Yes.
And is it your assessment that your mother physically was in a fit state?
No. Part of why she wanted the Fitbit was to increase her physical fitness.
Okay. She was working on her physical fitness.
Yes. She had one. I had one. And she bought my dad one, but he wouldn't wear it.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit about your husband Joe's parents. Who are they?
Ed and Charlene Murray.
Okay. And was there some sort of a competition between your mother and Ed and Charlene Murray?
If you make an account in Fitbit, you can add friends. They're people that you know, and you can compete with them to see who takes more steps during the day.
Okay. And were you aware of any competition that was going on between Ed and Charlene Murray and your mother?
Yes, my father-in-law took a lot of steps during the day, and she wanted to be the winner, and so she would try to beat him.
Would you describe your mother as a competitive person?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. And was there anything unusual with the way your mother operated her Fitbit?
Yes.
Objection, Your Honor. Calls for speculation.
Sustained.
At any time, did you observe your mother using an unusual manner in which to operate her Fitbit?
The Fitbit is designed so that way you walk and it measures your step by your arm moving. You can count more steps than you are actually taking if you shake your arm. And at nighttime,
I'm going to object and voir dire a native objection.
You may voir dire, Ms. Blake.
Thank you. Ms. Murray, do you recall visiting with your dad on or about November 17th of last year?
No.
Do you recall a conversation you had with him about the Fitbit and your dad telling you that your mom would hang her arm over the bed and swing it?
I observed my mom do that.
Do you recall having that conversation with your father?
No.
All right, Ms. Blake, is there an objection?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, you can continue, Mr. Pryor.
Thank you. So back to the question, you mentioned in response to Ms. Blake that you observed your mother with her Fitbit, and exactly what was she doing?
She was trying to get more steps to beat my in-laws.
There was a competition.
Yes.
And did you where did you observe her doing this with the Fitbit?
She had two locations where she would do this. She called it exercise.
Okay.
She would be in the living room. She would place an iPad on the back of her recliner and play the game Candy Crush while shaking her arm. And she would also lie in her bed while reading a book on her Kindle while shaking her arm.
Okay. Was it your habit of your mother to read at night?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. I want to change gears a little bit. And at the time of your mother's passing, where were you living?
I was living across the street, diagonal, kitty corner.
Okay. So if there are, my recollection is there's three or four houses on that corner. Is that correct?
Correct.
So your house that you were staying in would have been on what location? The southwest or southeast?
I'm bad with directions. Okay. I live close. That house is closer towards Rexburg.
Okay. Directly across the street, not diagonally. Is there a neighbor that you know over there?
There's two houses. There was a house that Matt and Regan Price were living in.
Okay. And then there's another house on the opposite.
There's side. Another house. I don't know those people though.
Okay. So you were across the street and kitty corner from your father. Would that be fair?
Yes.
Relatively close.
Yes.
Okay. Now there's been some discussion about your mother training for a 5K race. Do you have any information about that?
I was training for a 5K race, but she was not.
Okay. And why do you say she was not?
I invited her to run with me and she told me no, and that she never would.
Okay. Now there was some discussion about your husband in September sponsoring a 5K race. Do you recall that of 2019?
Yes. He wanted to fundraise for an organization called Operation Underground Railroad. And he organized a 5K race. A similar one had been put on in the community before, and he wanted it to happen again. And so he organized it. My mother helped.
Okay. Well, in helping, did your mother participate in that 5K race?
She did not.
There was a discussion about some previous testimony about someone observing her. I believe it was a principal observing her crossing the finish line. Do you have any personal observations about what you saw that day?
My mother may have walked across the finish line while helping with the race administration. She was not entered as a participant and she did not go the entire distance. There were some people at the end of the race who were going very slowly, and a group of people walked with them to encourage them to finish. And she may have been with that group, although I don't remember seeing her.
Okay. So what you're saying then is that you may have observed her with some people helping somebody across the finish line, but to your knowledge, she wasn't participating in the race.
That is correct.
She wasn't registered in the race.
She wasn't dressed to run either. She was wearing blue jeans.
Okay. And do you specifically remember that from September of 2019?
Yes.
Okay. I want to change the subject a little bit about the clogging and the Zumba high fitness classes. What can you tell me about you and your mother's participation in those classes?
At that time, my mother and I were both overweight and wanted to exercise more. And some ladies at the school invited us to come to a class that they were going to. It was in the evening at a local elementary school. in the gym.
Can you tell me when approximately you and your mother started those classes?
We started going in April 2019.
And this was a joint effort to improve both of your fitness?
That's correct.
In your situation, was that shortly after a birth of one of your children?
That's correct.
And I got a lot of heat for suggesting people's weight and size and everything else, but needless to say, there was a, you felt personally.
Yes, that is my own words. I was overweight and I wanted to get healthier.
Okay. And you, your mother, from discussions with her, shared the same view?
Yes. I don't know how much she weighed.
Objection, Your Honor, calls for speculation.
Sustained.
Okay. In any event, the purpose of the Zumba class was for both of you to try to improve your fitness.
Yes.
Okay. Can you talk about the level of participation that both of you engaged in as part of those clogging and Zumba classes?
The idea of the Zumba class, high fitness, is that you can participate to whatever ability you're able to. The way that the gym was set up is it was a school multi-purpose room, so it had a basketball court and a stage. Our instructor would be on the stage where everybody could see her moving, and we would mirror her body movements, similar to how you would copy an exercise video at your house. It was just live. We would dim the lights in the room and turn on party lights to make it feel more fun than a typical aerobics class. So it was dark in the room. You could see silhouettes of people in front of you, but you wouldn't really be able to see people around you. That's part of why it was appealing, is if you couldn't dance very well, nobody would make fun of you.
Okay. And in terms of location, where did you generally stand or participate in these Zumba classes?
My mother and I would go to the back of the room.
Was there a purpose for that?
There were different skill levels in the classroom, and we were on the poor end of that spectrum, and so we didn't want people looking at us.
Was it a requirement that you participate fully in every part of the dance or every route? And I don't know what the proper term is, routine or dance?
I think routine is fair, but no, you're not required to. The entire thing is voluntary to even show up and participate.
Okay. Okay. And then as far as the clogging, do you recall how often the clogging classes took place?
We would go once a week on Wednesdays. We went for about 6 weeks.
Okay. And for about 6 weeks?
Yes.
So if I do my math correctly, and you're the teacher, not me, that's six times?
Just about.
Okay. And then did that continue? When did the clogging end?
She stopped going when she died.
Okay. And then when did it start?
About 6 weeks before. It was with the beginning of a school year.
So if there's a suggestion by anyone that your mother had been clogging and doing Zumba class for over a year, would that be accurate?
Objection, Your Honor. Argumentative calls for speculation.
Sustained.
I want to talk a little bit about your mother's other experience. Did she have any self-defense training?
Not through a formal class, but our church would periodically organize evenings, enrichment night, where you could learn different skills. And in Springville, they would routinely have the police show us self-defense skills.
And how often did you do that?
Maybe once a year.
And if you were to assess your mother's ability to fight off someone if they were attacking her, how would you rate that?
Objection, Your Honor, lack of foundation and calls for speculation.
Sustained.
Did you ever observe your mother engage in any sort of physical activity where she practiced fending off any assailants?
There's a game on the Wii, a video game system called Exerbeat. And there's a kickboxing portion where you can practice punching.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit about life insurance. And I want to mention the name Taylor Ballard. Do you know that name?
Yes. The Ballard Insurance Group offers insurance for our school district.
Okay. And did you have an occasion in September at the start of school to engage in a presentation by the Ballard office?
At one of our faculty meetings, they came and talked to us about life insurance and increasing it. And they showed us that the rates were competitive or it was really cheap insurance. And so they encouraged us to purchase some. And both my mother and I purchased some at that meeting.
Okay. And at the meeting, was it at the meeting that both of you just elected to purchase the insurance?
Yes.
So prior to that, and I can't remember, in September of 2019, I believe you were married at that point. Is that correct?
I was.
Did you consult with your husband before you elected to up your insurance at that point?
Objection, Your Honor. Relevance.
Sustained.
Are you aware as to whether or not your mother consulted with the insurance with your father prior to upping her insurance on that meeting day with Taylor Ballard?
Objection, Your Honor. Calls for speculation.
Overruled.
Are you aware of whether or not your mother consulted with your father on that day to up her insurance?
Objection, Your Honor. Calls for hearsay.
Overruled.
You can answer it.
We were sitting at a table and filled out the paperwork together. We both signed to take out more life insurance on ourselves, and we did not consult with our husbands.
Okay. And at that point, did you take up the maximum amount of insurance that you could purchase at that point?
I did not, because I could not afford it. I later did.
Okay. At the next period?
Yes.
But it's your understanding that without discussing with your father, your mother elected to up her insurance to the maximum amount?
I saw her check that box on the paper.
Okay. I want to change gears a little bit. And there was some testimony about a Google search for south-southwest wind. And that would have been on 9-8 of 19. Do you recall that?
I do.
And was that your father who did that search?
That was me.
And what was the purpose of doing that search?
I saw a rainstorm. We were planning an outdoor event, and I wanted to know if those clouds were coming our way. The weather forecast for where we live in Rexburg is sometimes inaccurate because we don't live in Rexburg. So I was trying to be an amateur meteorologist, and the weather app said it was coming from the south-southwest, and I didn't know if that meant it was coming or going from the southwest. And so I did a Google search on the desktop computer that my parents kept in the living room.
Okay.
That would have been typical at that time. I was late to getting a smartphone, so using a desktop computer would have been more comfortable for me. And it was common just to jump on the computer. There wasn't any login or anything, so it was just getting on the internet.
Okay, and the access to that computer, I'd like you to talk a little bit about where that computer was in relation to the rest of the house.
My parents had two different computers, a PC and a Mac. There's different capacities of each one, and my mom liked different parts of both for the business. So they had one of both, and they were next to each other in the living room. And the screens were set up so that way everybody could see the screen.
And you talked a little bit about your mother and the financial issues. When you talk about your, and I just had a lapse as to the name of your father's publishing company.
Spring Creek Book Company.
Spring Creek Book Company. And I'm going to mess it up again, so please bear with me. How would you describe the different roles of your father and mother in terms of their participation in the Spring Creek Book Company?
I would say that my dad was the creative side behind it, and my mom was the one that made everything happen with finances and logistics. My dad would find authors or potential authors that could write books, and he would meet with them and give them guidance to write. And my mother would help design book covers. Most of them she did by herself. And she would do the finances and taxes for the company. And they worked together on it. And I don't think they could have done each other's jobs.
Okay. But there was access in both of them. Was it necessary for both of them to know the passwords to all of the organizational, for lack of a better word, all of the organization of the Spring Creek Book Company?
Yes, they were both able to log into the required programs.
Okay, there was no need for them to be provided or have someone provide them with the passwords. They were both well aware of them?
That's correct. And my mother also would typically save her passwords. So even if you knew it, you wouldn't need to type it in.
Okay. I want to change gears a little bit. We're going to get back to your father and his artistic side in a minute, but I want to change gears about the physical description of the home that you're now living in. Would it be fair to say that it's a brick house?
Yes.
A one-story?
Yes.
That there's a garage?
Yes.
Is there an unusual structure that's attached to the back of the garage?
Yes. The previous owner constructed a building over the pump house where the well is, the machinery that draws water for the house. And it's unheated. It's built from a different material than the rest of the house. There's not very much electricity that goes to it.
Okay. And did any of your brothers or sister ever use that and what was the word for that?
Cozy cone.
Cozy what?
Cone.
Cone. C-O-N-E?
Yes.
Okay. Is there a time when at least one of your brothers would use the cozy cone?
We all would periodically, the children. We would play musical instruments up there. It was far enough away from the rest of the house that you could play loudly on drums and it wouldn't annoy mom. And you could turn up your guitar amp as loud as you wanted and nobody could hear it. But I would go up there. My brother Mark would. My sister Leah would go up there to study sometimes because it was quieter.
Now, in terms of access to the cozy cone, is it true you have to go through the garage in order to get into the cozy cone?
Yes.
And how would you do that?
Well, you would open the door to go into the garage, walk through the garage, go through another doorway, and you would be in a hallway. And then to go upstairs, you would have to go through another doorway. It was really inconvenient.
Okay. I want to touch a little bit about your father's faith beliefs. And my understanding is you're of the LDS faith.
Yes.
And you're a participant, an active participant in your faith. Is that correct?
Yes.
How would you describe your father's faith?
I would say very traditional in what he believed. And he would research very carefully, and he wanted to stick to as close as the original form as he could. So he was really interested in teachings from Joseph Smith and Brigham Young and similar early leaders of the church.
Would it be fair to describe your father as a fundamental?
Yes.
Okay. And you didn't share his religious beliefs?
Not necessarily.
Okay. Some of them you were?
Yes.
Some of them that are consistent with your current LDS faith. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. But you would describe him as someone from days gone by, foregone?
Yes.
Okay. Very traditional?
Yes.
Okay. Literalist?
I don't know what you mean by that.
Looked at the words and applied the plain meaning of the words?
Yes.
Okay. And there's some theories that you didn't necessarily agree with him. Is that correct?
Yes.
Would that be a subject of discussion at the dinner table when you were growing up?
Yes.
Okay. And do your brothers and sisters all share your father's fundamental beliefs?
I think they're more similar to me, that there's elements that they might feel drawn to and others that they don't.
Are there elements of your father's faith that you don't necessarily agree with?
Yes.
Okay. There's been some discussion about the idea of light and dark. Can you describe to me what you understand to be the concept of light and dark?
The phrases good and evil would be talking about your actions, what you chose to do, where light and dark would be talking about your motivations. Light means that you're acting selflessly like the Savior would be, and dark means that you're selfish, focusing inward like Satan would be.
Okay. Was this something that your mother, from your discussions with your family, shared with your father in terms of her beliefs?
Yes.
So would it be fair to say that your mother's beliefs, to your knowledge, were also of the fundamental or traditional node?
Probably more so than him.
Okay. Did she ever have discussions about putting numbers, death percentages or numbers, whether how light and how dark a person would be?
Yes.
Did she do that frequently?
Yes.
Okay. Was it particularly about anybody, or was it as her day-to-day activities, she would make comments about that?
As she came across people and observed things, she would mention it.
Objection, Your Honor, calls for hearsay.
Sustained.
Okay. Now, you had an occasion personally to deal with your mother's rating system in terms of dark. Is that correct?
Several.
Okay. And was there an occasion when your mother engaged in a practice of trying to rid some sort of dark entity from you?
Yes.
And can you describe what that was about?
Objection, Your Honor, relevance.
Oral.
Can you describe what that was about, please?
I have struggled with anxiety for years, and it was feeling very unmanageable. And I felt like there was a being that was with me. And I talked to my parents about it. And my dad cast it out using the power of the priesthood. And then I felt better afterwards.
Okay. When you say the power of the priesthood, what do you mean by that?
The power of God given by the laying on of hands.
Is that something that has to be specially endowed upon something? Or is that some sort of a patriarchal role that someone gets as head of a family household?
Any eligible man can have it.
Okay.
If they're living and keeping covenants in the church.
Okay. And on issues of covenants in the church, your father's not a perfect person, is he?
No.
And you're aware of a relationship that had been going on, and I'm not trying to embarrass you or cause you some difficulty, but you did subsequently learn that your father had a relationship with another woman.
Yes.
And that was not an appropriate relationship.
It was not.
Okay. And at this point, it was, for all practical purposes, having a relationship with Lori Vallow while still being married to your mother.
That's correct.
And would you agree that not anybody's perfect?
Yes.
You're not perfect.
No.
None of us are perfect.
Nobody.
Okay. So when you say qualified male to help with the dark spirit or the dark entity, what do you mean by that?
Like the procedure to get rid of it?
No, just the type of male. Is it someone who's head of a family or what is it?
In that case, I wanted to talk to my parents, but because they were my leaders in our family. But any man who is an adult and can make the promises to keep teachings of the church and to use the power to serve other people is eligible to receive it. That wasn't unique to my father.
And then the giving blessings in not your father's faith, but in your faith, it's not uncommon for people to give blessings to each other. Would that be fair?
It's common for people to do that.
Okay. And it's common for people to offer to give blessings to people in your faith. Is that fair?
Yes.
And it could come from any direction. Would that be fair?
What do you mean?
Anybody can give another person a blessing.
Yes, as long as the man is eligible.
Or anybody can give a blessing to, if you felt moved, you could give a blessing to another male. Is that possible?
In the fundamentalist views, around the time of Joseph Smith, there were women that would do that. That's frowned upon today, though.
Okay, so at this point, it's usually the head of the male or a male person who is the one who would generally give the blessing to other people. Would that be fair?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Now, while you were dealing with this dark entity, is it your understanding that when you're going through the process of trying to rid that dark entity or that feeling of, and would you describe it as a feeling? Would that be a fair way to describe it?
I felt like there is an actual person trying to control me.
Okay. And at that point, after the conclusion of what your mother engaged in and your father engaged in, did you feel relieved or some recovery as a result of that?
I instantly felt better. I felt like the individual that was trying to affect my body was gone.
Okay. And this is something that is not inconsistent with the LDS teachings, light and dark and these sort of entities. Would that be fair?
And all Christianity and the Bible, the Savior would cast spirits out of people.
Okay. And at this point, as a result of casting out the spirits, does that mean that after they cast the spirits out, you die?
No.
Is there any instant that you can recall in your teachings as part of the fundamental or LDS church where by casting out a spirit, the result is someone dies?
No, the goal of it is so that way you have your own body back and can be in control of yourself.
Okay. Have you ever heard the word zombies?
Just on TV and movies.
Okay. And at this point, are you aware of whether by stating someone's a zombie and you do one of these castings, does that mean the person dies as well?
No.
Okay. And again, part of that casting and removal of the dark entities is also consistent with your LDS faith. Is that correct?
Yes.
I want to talk to you a little bit about a subject called the emotion code. Are you familiar with that?
Yes.
Talk to me a little bit about that.
It was developed by a man named Bradley Nelson. The idea of it is that you use...
Objection, Your Honor, relevance.
Sustained.
Were you aware of whether or not your parents used the emotion code?
Yes, they did.
Objection, Your Honor, relevance.
I would use it.
Hold on, before you keep answering, there's an objection that's pending. I am going to sustain the objection. There's been no relevance established for this, Mr. Pryor.
Well, I was trying to establish by having her talk about the emotion code, Judge.
Well, that's backwards of how we get evidence in, so please see either ask additional foundation or ask another topic.
Okay. Do you believe that your father and mother thought they could sense whether a person was light or dark?
Yes.
Was that something that was referred to as the emotion code?
No.
What is the emotion code?
Objection, Your Honor, relevance.
Sustained.
That's okay, Judge. We'll move on. Did you believe or ever observe your mother reflecting on her ability to identify what people's true intentions were?
Yes.
And would you talk to me a little bit about that?
Objection, Your Honor, relevance.
World.
Talk to me a little bit about that.
My mother learned about muscle testing or reflexology as a child from her parents, and later learned more about it through a class called the Emotion Code. The idea is that you use your body.
Objection, Your Honor, relevance.
Sustained.
Okay. Did you observe which one of your parents was better able to apply this issue of this true intentions?
My mother was more skilled at it.
Okay. I want to talk to you a little bit about your father's books. And how would you describe your father's novels in terms of fiction or nonfiction?
He did write some nonfiction books and some fiction.
Okay. He also wrote children's books?
Yes.
And the theories and ideas in his books, where do you think he derived most of his inspiration from?
Objection, Your Honor, calls for speculation.
Overruled.
You may answer.
The Latter-day Saint Church.
Okay.
And his own ideas.
Okay. And I want to clarify a little bit. When you say the Latter-day Saint Church, you're not necessarily meaning the current Latter-day Saint Church, are you?
No.
You're referring to what was at some time a more traditional view of some of the readings of the Latter-day Saints.
Yes.
And would you agree that it was your father's intention to sort of, and through his books, discuss some of those theories and express those through his books?
Yes, similar to how historical fiction can teach about the past. He wanted to teach about the future with fictional characters.
Okay. And it doesn't necessarily mean, as someone like you who's has a firm belief in the LDS faith, that you would necessarily agree with everything he put in his books. Would that be fair?
Yes, it was an interesting experience to read and to think about what I would do in similar situations, but I did not interpret it to be scripture in any way.
Nor did you interpret it something that you would generally accept or believe. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. How would you describe your father's personality?
Very introverted.
Much like your mother?
Yes.
Without name calling, would you describe your mother and father as more of a bookworm type?
Yes.
Okay. But your father enjoyed expressing his views about his religious theories, correct?
He enjoyed speaking in front of groups and teaching, but not necessarily talking one-on-one with many individuals. That would be very draining for him. But talking in front of a group and teaching had a different energy about it.
Okay. And your father found great satisfaction in anyone who would take an ear expressing his views. And once he got on the subject, he would...
It was something he was passionate about. And he enjoyed talking about it.
And Judge, if I could just have a moment, I've got more to do, but I just, if I could just recap real quick.
Go ahead.
Sorry, Your Honor. I want to talk to you a little bit about whether or not you know if your mother is familiar with paintball guns.
As a family and like her current family with husband and children?
I'm talking about from her past.
Oh, that's a common recreational thing where we grew up in Utah. It wasn't something she enjoyed doing, but she probably went at some point.
Okay. Were you familiar with her brother and uncle who were involved in that?
Yeah, she had an older brother and an uncle who was about their age that liked to do adventurous things.
Okay. So at the time, do you recall the incident with the paintball gun incident?
I do.
You recall approximately when the date of that was?
October 9th.
Did you have an occasion to talk to your mother about that?
Yes, I had been with her moments before. She had dropped me off from our clogging class, and then she went home. And she posted on Facebook about it. That's how I learned about it. And I called her immediately.
Okay. Was there any confusion as to what she felt someone was pointing at her?
She was very sure it was a paintball gun.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit about the day of your mother's passing. And if you need to take a break or use a tissue, please let me know, or water. Please stop me and we'll take whatever time you need, okay? You arrived at your mother and father's home approximately when on that day?
I don't recall an exact time, but it was before 7 o'clock in the morning.
Did you have an occasion to talk to Coroner Dye?
I did.
Can you tell me what the nature of that discussion, not necessarily what Coroner Dye expressed to you, but what you expressed to Coroner Dye?
Coroner Dye was inspecting my mom's body, and she asked us some questions about our wishes, and she offered an autopsy. In the area that we live in, the body would have to be taken to Boise, which is about 5 hours away, and it would delay the funeral. And this is my own personal view. I don't think autopsies should be done on anyone. And the idea of my mother's body undergoing that was very distressing to me.
Okay. Did your father at the time in front of Coroner Dye ever express an opinion as to whether he felt one way or the other about getting an autopsy?
Objection, Your Honor. Calls for speculation, lack of foundation.
If you would rephrase that, Mr. Pryor, to make sure it's something she observed and not through other means.
Did you ever observe your father have a discussion with Coroner Dye on the subject of an autopsy?
My father was very distressed and was not speaking at that moment.
Okay.
He didn't express any opinion.
Okay. Did you express an opinion to Coroner Dye about what your wishes were?
I did. I did not want an autopsy.
Did your father agree with you or disagree, or do you know what kind of a position he may or may not have taken at that point?
He nodded.
Okay. But he wasn't the one insisting, to your recollection, on having an autopsy done, was he?
Objection, Your Honor. Calls for speculation.
Sustained.
At any time, did your father express an opinion as to whether or not he wanted an autopsy or not?
Objection, Your Honor. This calls for speculation.
Overruled.
May I voir dire a native objection?
That's the way it was worded. It's a proper question the court will determine. So go ahead, Ms. Pryor.
I can answer that question, Emma.
Will you repeat it?
Madam Clerk, would you repeat the question for Emma?
Objection, Your Honor, hearsay. This calls for hearsay.
Overruled.
Go ahead.
He never expressed an opinion.
Okay. At the time of the discovery of the passing of your mother, how would you describe your father's emotions?
He was more distressed than I've ever seen him in my entire life. I'm used to, at that time I was an adult, but he felt like an adultier adult. I was used to my parents being in control and in charge, and seeing him so distressed and emotionally out of control was very scary to me. And I didn't doubt his grief at all. I'd never seen him more upset than in that moment.
Would you be able to assess whether that was genuine grief or not?
It appeared to be genuine grief.
Is there any doubt in your mind?
No doubt at all.
Okay. You understand that at the time he was involved in an affair with another woman, correct?
Correct.
But in spite of that, you still felt that he was genuinely grieved about your mother's death?
But I know that the grief that he felt was real. He may not have had the same romantic relationship with my mother that he had in the past, but I know that he valued her as a person, and seeing her die was very traumatic.
I want to move forward to a trip to California in November. Do you recall that?
Yes.
Okay. And can you give me an idea of approximately when that trip was in November?
It was right before Thanksgiving.
Okay.
And over Thanksgiving break.
And in terms of how that trip came about, I would like to start with, you started somewhere in Idaho, is that correct?
Correct.
And who was on that trip?
My father, me, my husband, our son, my sister, her husband, their son, my brother, Garth.
So if I go back over that long list, your sister, Leah, was there.
Yes.
With her husband.
Yes.
Your husband, Joe.
Yes.
You.
Yes.
Garth.
Yes.
Garth didn't have his wife at that point.
He was not married at that time.
Okay. And then in addition, your father.
Yes.
And you left the St. Anthony Rexburg area, fair?
Yes.
Where did you go?
We drove to the Salt Lake Airport.
Okay. And then from the Salt Lake Airport, what did you do?
We flew to California.
Okay. And then what did you do in California?
We went to Knott's Berry Farm.
Okay. How long of a trip was that?
Just a few days.
Was it a Thanksgiving trip of some kind?
Yes.
Okay. And then what was your father's plans after that weekend?
He was going to go live in Hawaii.
Okay. And was that going to be a permanent move?
No.
Temporary.
That's what he said.
Okay. And was there any secrecy applied to that meeting? Was there any way that he was trying to conceal where he was going or what he was doing?
No.
Okay. So it was public airline tickets?
Yes.
Public transportation?
Yes.
Public hotels?
Yes.
Okay. Public planning?
Yes.
Okay. And at some point, was someone else planning on going on that trip with you?
Yes. Lori Vallow attended with us.
Okay. Did she drive from Rexburg, St. Anthony area with you folks to Salt Lake City?
She did not leave the same time we did.
Okay.
She did not leave from the same location.
Okay. Do you know where she left from?
I do not.
Do you know when she arrived with you in California?
She arrived later that night, about 12 hours after we had left. She arrived by vehicle.
Okay. Did you ever find out why she was not going with you folks for the drive to Salt Lake and then the plane trip from Salt Lake to California?
She told me that she was with...
Objection, Your Honor. Calls for hearsay.
Stained.
She told me that she was with... Oh, sorry.
Hang on.
I can answer that.
Was there a discussion with her about what she was planning on doing prior to arriving in California?
Objection, Your Honor. This still calls for hearsay.
Stained.
Was there at any time, did you learn at any time what Lori Vallow was doing before she arrived at California?
Objection, Your Honor. This still calls for hearsay.
Response, Mr. Pryor.
It doesn't call for hearsay. I'm asking whether she learned of something, Judge. I'm not asking what she said to her.
Your Honor, may I voir dire native objection?
No, I'll overrule the objection. She can answer.
Did you at any time learn of where Lori Vallow was doing on the before she arrived in California?
She told me that she was...
Hang on. I don't want you to say what she told you, whether you learned information.
I learned...
Objection, Your Honor. This is why it calls for hearsay.
Judge, I'm not again asking for what Ms. Vallow may have said, although I think a statement of a co-conspirator, it comes in anyway.
Well, that is true. Co-conspirator statements do come in.
Your Honor... Not from only as a party opponent. So the state would still object. This calls for hearsay. It's not based on personal knowledge.
Judge, there's no indication that Ms. Vallow is on my side or in any way in support of...
Your Honor, case law is clear.
All right.
Judge, would this be time to take a break?
Yeah, I don't want to have continued argument over this in the juror's presence. I want to make sure we're going into these types of issues. I get a clear ruling before we continue with... objections in front of the jurors. So why don't we go ahead and take the morning recess a little earlier for 20 minutes here, and then I'll hear additional voir dire on this and argument and aid of objection, if there is any, and we'll make a ruling before we get back on with additional testimony. So that'll be the time for the morning recess, and we'll go ahead and take the break now.
And may she be excused to, at this point, she's coming back. May she be excused to?
She can step off the stand and take a break also, just not to discuss her testimony with anyone else, including you, Mr. Breyer.
Okay, thank you, Judge.
All right.
All right, please.
Emma, you can go back. I just can't talk to you.
Over the break here, you indicated case law is clear. I'd like to know if you have any citations for me to consider over the break.
Your Honor, and if I may have a moment to find the brief, this issue was actually pre-litigated when the cases, I believe, were still joined.
Okay.
And so I do have a motion that was previously in a brief that was previously provided to this court on the issue of statements of co-conspirators.
Okay. We'll take the recess, and I'll perhaps have my staff attorney, Ms. Stallings, see if you have a citation or a reference to a previous ruling the court's made on the issue and get that before we come back on for argument at some point. Likewise, if there's anything from the defense in support, Mr. Breyer, I'll give you obviously the same opportunity, and then we'll argue it on the record before we make any decision. All right. So we'll be on recess.
All right. Folks, stay where you are for just a moment. All rise. This court's again in session. Honorable Stephen W. Boyd, Judge Presiding.
Thank you. Please be seated. All right, we're back on the record on CR 22211623, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Daybell. We took the mid-morning recess. There was a pending objection on a hearsay grounds, and the court wanted to hear additional argument in making rulings on that because I think it's apparently a line of questioning that may come up more than just a single question. So there was a reference from the state that there was some either previous ruling or case law that may govern. So in support of the proposed objection, I'll allow the state to make any argument. I'll hear any response from the defense, and we'll go ahead and argue this matter outside of the presence of the jurors, who I will note are not present in the courtroom at this time. Ms. Blake, what is the response from the state in aid of your objection on the question about statements made by Lori Vallow on this trip?
Thank you, Your Honor. Idaho Rule of Evidence 801D2E excludes from the definition of hearsay a statement by a co-conspirator made during the course and in furtherance of the conspiracy. The scope of the co-conspirator exception is narrow, and the requirements that the co-conspirator's statement be made during the course of and in furtherance of the conspiracy as a prerequisite to admissibility that must be scrupulously observed, as set forth in State v. Harris 141 Idaho 721. Idaho Rule 801 makes clear that an exception to a hearsay requirement is if it is offered against the opposing party. So specifically, and this is actually a case from a the Federal Court of the Northern District of California from 2022, State v. Garcia, citation, U.S. District, Lexus 98958. And it says an out-of-court statement is not hearsay if it is offered against an opposing party and was made by the party's co-conspirator during and in furtherance of the conspiracy. The statement of a co-conspirator is admissible against the defendant if the government makes a showing. I think there is some reference that can be made to the Crawford analysis when it comes to testimonial statements. However, nothing being proposed to be offered today would even be testimonial. I think Rule 801 and laying out the hearsay exceptions makes very clear, as well as that case from California, that the statement of a co-conspirator is a the co-conspirator is a party opponent to the state, not to the other co-defendant or co-conspirator. Therefore, the introduction of a statement made by a co-conspirator is not an automatic hearsay exception for a co-conspirator, since the state would be the party opponent, not the other co-conspirators. Statements of co-conspirators are admissible as hearsay exceptions against other co-conspirators as introduced by the state. So I think the only times that there could be an exception would be if it was the testimonial and would fall under the Crawford exception in looking at whether or not there's a confrontational clause that comes into play. I don't think there's any indication that we're even within that realm. And I think the rule alone in Idaho is pretty clear that it is a statement of a party opponent. Co-conspirators are not party opponents.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Blake. Mr. Pryor, how would these responses not be subject to the hearsay rule?
Judge, a statement by a party opponent, and Ms. Blake was kind enough to point out that she's the party opponent in this case. And a statement is not hearsay if it's made against a party opponent. The allegations that the state are making is that in somehow Ms. Vallow and Mr. Daybell were involved in a conspiracy. The statement by Ms. Vallow would suggest that, that Mr. Daybell was not part of that conspiracy, and thus a statement against the party opponent, the state of Idaho, in their prosecution of Chad Daybell.
All right. I've considered the argument here and on the ruling, certainly interesting issue, and I appreciate the parties allowing time for the court to consider this also. I think two things looking at, number one, whether or not this would be some statement coming in furtherance of the conspiracy. And I think obviously it's problematic if the defense is proffering that these statements are in furtherance of the conspiracy that involves the defendant being alleged as a co-conspirator. And also on the exception for an opposing party in the State versus Garcia site, looking at the rule here where this is being offered in the defense case in chief, and the statements of this co-conspirator, this is different than obviously the state putting on evidence alleging a conspiracy amongst co-conspirators. This is a witness called by the defense, and I do, again, think it's really problematic if there's some sort of proffer that statements were made here in furtherance of the conspiracy, which is generally where that rule allows for the exception. I also find that the state is not a party opponent. We're not quite ready. Sorry. False alarm. All right. I'll just note on the record, the jurors started entering the courtroom, but were excused without hearing any of the court's ruling here. For these reasons, though, also, it's not a statement of offered against the opposing party here. There's no indication that there's any statements directly from Lori Vallow about or against the state of Idaho here. So the court is going to sustain the objection on this or any other grounds that come up in relation to statements made by Lori Vallow, unless, again, they fall within these narrow exceptions under 801 D2E. The court finds that does not apply as an exception. So I am going to sustain the hearsay objection. So that'll be the court's ruling.
And Judge, if I could have some parameters, my understanding is that the court is excluding Emma Murray from stating what Lori Vallow told her, but that doesn't exclude me from inquiring as to whether there was a discussion about a particular topic. At least the way I read the rules, that doesn't exclude me from inquiring as to whether a particular topic was discussed with Ms. Murray and Ms. Vallow. Is that correct?
All right. Well, my ruling is limited to the line of questionings that came up. So whether or not, again, it goes into hearsay and eliciting statements made by Lori Vallow that are asserted for the truth of the matter asserted, the court would take those up individually if they come up again. But this is the framework going forward as it relates to comments she may have made. So there may be other exceptions that would apply, and I don't know what comments or statements she made and whether they'd be subject to any other rule. But in terms of the co-conspirator exception, that'll be the court's ruling.
Okay. Thank you, Judge.
All right. Thank you. That'll be the ruling then on that. And so we'll go ahead and have the jurors return since I know they're ready. And then we'll have the witness please return to the stand. And Mr. Pryor, you can take the podium.
Thank you.
Thank you. Please be seated.
There's more to come in the trial of Chad Daybell. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage right here from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
I can't tell you how often I hear, oh, I'm a little OCD. I like things neat. That's not OCD. I'm Howie Mandel, and I know this because I have OCD. Actual OCD causes relentless unwanted thoughts. What if I did something terrible and forgot? What if I'm a bad person? Why am I thinking this terrible thing? It makes you question absolutely everything, and you'll do anything to feel better. OCD is debilitating, but it's also highly treatable with the right kind of therapy. Regular talk talk therapy doesn't cut it. OCD needs specialized therapy. That's why I want to tell you about NoCD. NoCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for OCD. Their licensed therapists provide specialized therapy virtually, and it's covered by insurance for over 155 million Americans. If you think you might be struggling with OCD, visit NoCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call and learn more. That's NoCD.com.